The best wrestling show, period, is back. I'm Mike Mansouri alongside the icon of the airwaves, Mark Madden. And there's a lot of news happening in the world of sports and entertainment. Double M, we've got some breaking news coming into our recording session here this lovely Tuesday morning. So let's dive right into it, brother.
Yeah, NXT made it official, moving to Tuesday nights on the USA Network, which leaves AEW unopposed on Wednesday. Impact has already moved to Thursday, so now we have Raw on Monday, NXT on Tuesday, AEW Wednesday, Impact Thursday, SmackDown on Friday, pay-per-views on the weekend, and of course the various streaming shows like AEW has on Monday and Tuesday, and Ring of Honor in syndication. It's all way too much, but wrestling's always been about overkill. This may be the most overkill ever. In fact, it for sure is in terms of programming. Mike, it reminds me of back when I was a tape trader in the 80s, and I had to catch up with Mid-South, with Crockett, with Florida, with World Class Championship Wrestling. It was just plug it in, watch it, pull it out, next tape up. Only this is on live TV or taped to live every night of the week.
It's wild, man. We're in a hell of a time in the wrestling business. If you're a fan and if you like variety, because you're going to certainly get a lot of that variety, but you are getting a lot of that variety. USA getting NXT over on Tuesday nights now as part of a multi-year extension with WWE and NXT. And Mark, it was no secret kind of going into it. There have been whispers, right? You know, a lot of the talks from those of us in the sports side of things, we all know with the impending closure of the NBC Sports Network that the USA Network was going to come along and pick up a lot of the bulk of the NHL contract that's still in existence, USA being a part of the NBC Universal umbrella. So it only made sense that USA was going to come in and step in. And if you're NXT, you can't afford a preemption on a Wednesday night for an NHL game. So I think it's the smart move for NXT, obviously a smart move for NBC Universal and the USA Network, because it just bolsters their standing as the number one rated cable network in all the land. I mean, and you could very much say, you know, and I've seen it statistically improving, that's because of what WWE's ratings bring to the USA Network. While they're even on the downside, you're still boosting USA up at a pretty credible rate.
It's consistently watched programming. And that's why TNT took AEW. That's why, you know, WWE is welcome on Fox, on USA, just all over the place. It's just consistently viewed programming. Even if the numbers are a little down, numbers for other shows pale by comparison. I mean, wrestling does a better number than hockey, but NBC and now by extension USA are so connected to hockey, and Wednesday is a hockey night for the NBC Sports Network. That's going to move to USA, I presume, to quote my friend, the retired Doc Emmerich, it's a rivalry Wednesday. And I think we're going to see the NHL on USA on Wednesdays. And that's one thing, Mike, I hope the quote-unquote journalists who cover wrestling, who never get outside the wrestling bubble. NXT didn't get moved to Tuesday to get away from AEW. NXT moved to Tuesday to make room for hockey on USA. That's what happened. Although I'm sure, you know, like I said, the so-called journalists will spin it the other way. Now, yeah, what I'm curious about is, how will this affect AEW's rating on Wednesday? You tell me first, because I have my ideas.
So, I mean, I think this is going to be a telling sign for both companies, right? Like, I'm curious to see, Mark, what the rise in viewership is going to be. If this is truly going to be that split audience that you had on Wednesday, you know, whatever the breakdowns tended to have been, it looks like, for the sake of our argument here, let's say there were 1.6 million households that were split between NXT and AEW on a Wednesday night. Are those 1.6 million households going to stay with AEW on Wednesday? Will they come over on Tuesday to stay with NXT? I don't think so, and I don't think so for either brand. I think you're going to kind of see things level off at that steady 750 to 800K that, you know, AEW kind of stays around, and NXT, when it peaks, kind of hits that number. I think NXT will maybe rise just a hair to hit that 800K level, but I don't expect this massive increase where all of a sudden, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday nights are going to start hitting 1.5s and 1.6s and 1.7s to get closer to that Monday Night Raw territory.
There's an assumption among the AEW faithful that AEW will absorb the entire NXT audience. I will be shocked if their rating goes up by more than 3 to 5%, once the dust settles. There could be an initial push that takes it higher than that, but I think when the dust settles and things level out, their increase will be 3 to 5%. I think NXT on Tuesday will go down a bit initially, because it's tough to get people to follow you from night to night. It does happen, but it's a gradual process.
I agree.
So I think AEW will go up and then level out. I think NXT will go down and then rise up and level out. So I think there will be a slight gain by both, but only a slight gain.
Well, it's funny, right? And it sounds silly in theory, but you do have to condition audiences to get used to new viewing patterns. And moving a show to a different night, while it may seem as simple as, well, all right, Tuesday nights we're watching NXT now, it really isn't. And you have to condition that new audience, and you have to inform that audience that, hey, this is the new night, this is where we're going to live, start getting used to it, NXT on a Tuesday. And, you know, let's see what happens. I just think, Mark, like we said before, kind of we dove pretty deep into this. There's just so much content around that, you know, more isn't necessarily the answer. And I think it's going to be very telling across every brand of wrestling, you know, that's occupying every weekday now, is what's it going to do to your viewership numbers? Because there's so much. I mean, look, there's only so much wrestling that anyone can take during the week. And now you're getting it Monday through Friday, and the exception, you know, the every Sunday pay-per-view, it seems like, you know, what's going to happen? I'm kind of curious. I just don't think it's going to be anything in terms of a massive surge.
No, I 100% agree. And, you know, what I feel a bit bad for is Impact, because they're getting bullied around as the third wheel in this drama. Well, fourth if you caught NXT and WWE is separate. And I think their programming has been consistently good. And I thought initially when they started doing the co-op with Don Callis and Kenny Omega moving back and forth between Impact and AEW, that Impact would get a big kiss from that. But their ratings have been way down. Now, I know they're limited with AXS, that's only on, you know, a limited amount of cable options, but I thought they'd get more out of it than they have. And in fact, they've gone backwards, however, imperceptibly. But I think that wrestling ratings as a whole, now that we're spread out over five nights, it wouldn't surprise me if a year from now, Mike, if all the numbers for all the programs are a little bit down, because that's just too much wrestling. Yeah. And people don't want to spread it out over five nights. As a wrestling fan, I liked Wednesday with two programs, just like I used to like the Monday Night Wars. Backstage at Nitro, we would watch Raw, you know, go back and forth. I mean, that's fun to do. It's fun to split screen, and now you can't do that anymore.
Now, there's something about it. Like, right, like I was producing NXT during the beginning of the quote-unquote Wednesday Night Wars, and I had them on in my control room, just like I'm sure they had NXT on in their control room. And it was just interesting to see kind of the moves that we were making against each other. And you counter-program while you're on air, you know what I mean? Like, I know this was a lot more prevalent during the Monday Night War, but, you know, they would flex segments around and switch things around based on what WCW was doing, and WCW, I'm sure, would do it compared to what WWE was doing. You know, your commercial break times, when you're going to break and how you're going to break, etc. It just makes for it almost makes a competition. Not it almost, it does make a competition within the fact that you're producing a live piece of content that you want to be the absolute best it could possibly be. It just makes it almost a fun game while you're in the midst of doing it, and everyone just gets charged up because there's so much pride, Mark, that kind of goes into it. So I will miss that, but again, it'll be interesting to see the shape that the landscape takes on the other side of this once that move happens on Tuesday, April 13th, following WrestleMania. So best of luck to NXT, best of luck to AEW. We'll see how that unfolds. But Mark, another piece of breaking news that has started to kind of trickle its way out in the late hours of last night and into this morning. We talked last week about Charlotte Flair and the Andrade being granted his release. So now it comes out that Andrade, in an interview with a media outlet in Mexico, I believe, announces that Charlotte was taken off of the WrestleMania promotional materials because of a potential pregnancy.
Yeah, I've been told that, you know, that was a possibility, that they were going to try to start a family. But then we had the COVID story. There's been all these different reasons why she's not been on. And I got to be honest, I don't necessarily trust journalism anywhere. I'm trying to phrase this real delicately. I'll give an example.
Sure.
I'll give an example. I'm a big soccer fan, Liverpool Football Club.
You'll never walk alone, Mark.
And when, thank you very much. And whenever I read in a Spanish newspaper that a Liverpool star is going to transfer to Real Madrid or Barcelona, I take it with a grain of salt because I know that's what the guy in the paper reporting that wants. Okay, so I don't know if that quite applies to, you know, what was reported about what Andrade said. I also know things can be lost in the translation.
Right.
So I really want to know what the exact story is here. I mean, it all sounds good to me. I thought it was a possibility. I had heard, Mike, that there was a chance Charlotte was going to come out on Raw last night and be added to the match between Asuka and Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania.
And that was a rumor that had been.
And I kept waiting for her music to hit, and it did not happen.
It didn't come out, especially with the way they laid out that creative in last night's segment. But that rumor was swirling going into last night's Raw, Mark. And it's funny you should mention hearing an official statement, because I do have one coming from Charlotte Flair's teams. And this is courtesy of Alex McCarthy at AlexM_TalkSport, who reports a statement from Charlotte Flair's team. What Manny said about the pregnancy test in today's interview is true, but a significant amount of context is lost in translation, and we'd like to clear that up as best we can.
There you go.
A few weeks ago, Charlotte received a call from WWE Medical telling her that her HCG levels had come back high and she was being medically suspended for pregnancy. That day, she took several home tests that all came back negative. A few days later, blood work and ultrasound confirmed there was no pregnancy. This was before any issues with COVID. In parentheses, she's currently medically cleared. This put a lot of context in for her, mainly how small a woman's career window is. The men are able to work well into their 50s while the women are seen as older, quote unquote, in their early 30s even. For an athlete in her prime, these years mean everything. Her issue is with the process and how the information was relayed as opposed to the information itself. So it seems more or less a confirmation on Charlotte's side. And, you know, look, that's a topic that kind of came up in terms of, you know, the window of a woman's career, especially in the, you know, in the world of any sort of physical sport, right? You know, in terms of that, you know, in terms of wanting to be a mother and to have a family, you saw, you know, there were a lot of folks that were critical of Becky Lynch, Mark, after WrestleMania last year.
Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette and the pretty disgusting
work that he had. How dare this selfish woman have a baby?
Yeah, I mean, that was just absolutely disgusting. I don't know Corny personally, but that's just not a take you want to have.
That's what he is.
Yeah, it's just a terrible take. And, you know, look, there was criticism on Becky on taking the time while she was probably at her peak to have, to start a family with her husband, Seth Rollins. But, you know, look, you can't dictate when, where, and how a person decides to start a family, do what they do with their lives, regardless if they're in the public eye or not. You know, and if Charlotte and Andrade are headed down the path of starting a family, or if that's something in the future to them, I say God bless and move forward and do what you got to do. But everyone, you know, keep your opinions and your shit to yourself. Let people do what they want.
Yeah, no question. I thought Cornette was way out of line, as he is almost every time he opens his mouth. What he said about Becky Lynch, Charlotte and Andrade decide is their business, and I wish them well. I mean, I know both, and they're great people as well as great performers. And here's another thing to bring up, Mike. With the little amount of time that's being dedicated to women's wrestling on WWE TV program, what's the point of being involved anyway? Well, I mean, if you're only going to put, you know, what was it? Carmella tweeted today, only 10 minutes of women on a 3-hour Raw. I forget the exact verbiage she used, but she was not best pleased. And she's right. And if that's all the women are going to be out there, then why would the women make it a priority?
Less than 10 minutes total in 3 whole hours was the exact tweet from at Carmella WWE. And Mark, she's 100% right. I mean, you know, it's almost as if we're revisiting the birth of the, you know, at that time it was a hashtag Give Divas a Chance that was started by AJ Lee, the wife of CM Punk. You know, AJ was kind of the first to hop on the soapbox, and not soapbox, forgive me for saying that. AJ was the first to speak up and say, hey, we have this talented roster here. Why are we relegated, you know, to just these tiny segments on Raw, filler segments, for lack of a better term, and barely given 5 minutes? Now here you are some 6 years later, and you're seeing in a 3-hour show while you're building to WrestleMania, no less, a total of 10 minutes or less than 10 minutes allotted to the women. It's wild, Mark. And I mean, even from sitting in this position less than 2 weeks out from WrestleMania, you've only got 2 women's matches made. You've only got the Raw Women's Championship Championship match with Asuka and Rhea Ripley. And then on SmackDown, you have the Bianca Belair-Sasha Banks match, which finally, maybe somebody listened to us last week, Mark, finally they're letting these women be the true characters that they were, you know, that they are, that they have established, and are finally putting that into the creative and letting this build go somewhere. But too little too late on my end, but I digress. But what are we doing here? Are we kind of going backwards? Or is this the cause of another swell to kind of push the division to that next level? Like, I don't know. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, how the women's division may have kind of plateaued, and these stars like Rhea, Bianca may be the women to kind of get them over the hump and into the next level. But it seems like something's amiss in the women's division at WWE.
Something's very amiss. And I'm with you. I thought the minor reset on Bianca and Sasha was good, but it was too little too late. It rang kind of hollow. The Asuka Rhea Ripley thing, it's a version of what we in WCW called a coffee pot match. Rhea Ripley just showed up and wanted to wrestle Asuka, and Asuka said, "You're not ready, but is okay," because they have her doing, I don't know what it's a caricature of. You know, I hate her character. I don't know if I find it offensive. I find it stupid. And I also know that Vince loves it, because that's the sort of thing that he would love. And I'm not detracting in the least from Asuka the performer. I think she's brilliant. And I think her and Charlotte are the Steamboat and Flair of the latter-day women's generation with some of the matches they've had. But I just don't get the presentation of Asuka. I don't get Rhea Ripley just walking in. We've talked about Bianca and Sasha. And what it all trickles back to, Mike, and it's why there's only 10 minutes of women's programming on a three-hour Raw. Vince doesn't believe in it. He pays lip service to believing in it. Stephanie uses it for PR, but Vince doesn't believe in it. And if he did believe in it, there would be more than 10 minutes of it on a three-hour Raw. You know, they can pay lip service to it and the blah, blah, blah all they want, but the proof is in the 10 minutes on a three-hour Raw, and nothing they can say can convince me otherwise.
Well, look, I don't necessarily agree with that from being there on the inside, that, you know, that the women's division isn't really relevant or matters as much. I think, Mark, you almost have to work backwards to the source of this, and I think it's what I said before. I think the fact that there are only two matches on the card kind of give you an indication of what the time allotted for the women are going to be going into WrestleMania if it's just those two matches, especially 2 weeks out. You know what I mean? 2 weeks out, you're full throttle, you know, advancing your stories and just kind of establishing what your WrestleMania card will be. Anything that's secondary or long term is going to go on the back burner here. So I think the fact that you're only seeing 10 minutes on a 3 hour show, we'll see what happens on Friday with SmackDown, what they do with Bianca and Sasha Banks. But I would say that, you know, this is very telling that the two matches that are on the card right now may very well be the only two women's matches that you're going to see in all of WrestleMania.
Well, and that'll speak volumes as well. And if there is more time given to women on SmackDown and Raw, it'll be reactionary because of what Carmella said and how people responded to that. But I just don't think he believes in it. Why isn't Carmella involved in WrestleMania? Why isn't Bayley involved in WrestleMania?
She's the hottest.
They have some other really good performers,
Mark,
there,
Bayley,
that are
Bayley,
just left out in the cold right now.
Bayley is the hottest performer in the women's division right now, and that's not even through her wrestling. We all know Bayley can work, but the stuff that she's been doing, especially the Ding Dong Hello show that she's been doing, she's on fire, and it's a mistake to not capitalize and have her represented in some way, shape, form, or fashion. You know, you give her due, right? WrestleMania was always the platform where your best stories kind of culminate, and you know, you get what you want, and you're moving forward at your new season. We're not seeing any of that right now. It just seems very, very hodgepodge, and I think it's due to the fact that things are just so very last minute. And look, to play devil's advocate, I get with COVID, it's very, very hard to book long term because you never know what could happen, how it can jeopardize your booking, and, you know, everything else in between. But at the same time, there's just got to be some sort of, you got to have an idea and a blueprint, not just here.
Yeah, no question. And I just want to say on behalf of Bayley, who I agree, I think she's a great performer. They have been blowing it with her since day one. When she was in NXT as the little girl hero with the side pony, I went to an NXT show at a small venue here in Pittsburgh, Stage AE, and it was packed with little girls with side ponies with the hugger t-shirts.
Yeah.
I mean, packed. They were like a third of the audience. If you can get kids to show up at a wrestling show, you are a commodity that's beyond valuable. And then they brought her up to the big program and didn't know what to do with her. They should have just done that with her. They've been blowing it with her since day one.
Well, you can almost argue that Bayley started the trend for a lot of the folks that would come forward on NXT that just didn't translate well. You said Asuka before, right? Asuka at NXT was this charismatic ass kicker. Phenomenal. The presentation of Asuka at NXT, I think, was the best that we've ever seen of Asuka. Bianca Belair, now things are starting to come around for her on SmackDown, but the Bianca Belair presentation on NXT was phenomenal. You can go on and on and on and on of the stuff that didn't work down in Orlando, that once it came up to Raw or SmackDown, they kind of fumbled. And maybe it was an instance of it was fumbled or maybe redesigned because, you know, it wasn't created up there or whatever the case may have been. But look at Bayley, the character Bayley now, where she's evolved to. You know what I mean? It's a complete departure from the hugger that wants to high five and do all the fun stuff with the wacky inflatable tube guys. This character is great. It's entertaining. And the ring work is there behind it. We're just not seeing enough of it. And again, I think it's a crime that Bayley is not represented as of right now at WrestleMania. She should have a match. I'm sure there'll be some sort of segment thrown in. But, you know, again, we've got, 11 days at this point, 12 days to find out what exactly the representation will be. So we'll all wait with bated breath.
Well, Mike, let me ask you, because you work there. Here's a theory I've always had about the writers for the various promotions, the various programs in WWE. When something succeeds in NXT and they move to the main roster, do you think the writers for the main roster, whether it be Raw or SmackDown, say, well, that might have worked down there at the lower level, but we know better. We can come up with a better idea. Do you think there's any of that? Because it seems that way.
100%. 100% that is definitely that way. And I think, you know, there's also an element of, you know, and not meaning this derogatory, but there's also an element of ignorance to it because you are so busy with Raw and SmackDown. Writing those shows and planning long-term is a job in of itself, you know, that you don't have the opportunity or the time, if you will, to focus on NXT and really get an understanding for who and what these characters are. And to me, Mark, that's kind of a big disconnect. But also that disconnect exists on the main show. I think you have writers who are writing in the voice of characters that they don't understand. And in turn, you've also got talent that are working as characters that they don't necessarily understand. So it's a terrible marriage that's just going to lead to catastrophe. But for NXT specifically, you know, look, I've been a part of many a conversation where you know that folks that are going to be writing on the Raw and SmackDown side have very little to zero knowledge of the characters that they're getting in, you know, these quote unquote call-ups from NXT.
Now, does Vince monitor NXT closely?
I would say he's got eyes on it. You know, again, you know, look, he's the CEO of a massive company, but you know, Vince is aware. He's gotten eyes on takeovers, and I'm sure he's seen episodes of NXT TV.
See, because my point would be, Mike, and I'm regarding the Bayley character sure. Back when specifically to make an example. If Vince was familiar with that character, he should have said to his writers on Raw and SmackDown, plop her in exactly as is and let her run with that. But that didn't happen. Or if it did, it didn't happen for very long.
No, right? You would say that a character like the original incarnation of Bayley is sort of your female John Cena in that it's the perfect PG family-friendly character. But again, I think it was an opportunity squandered when she came up, and I think Bayley made the best of it and has evolved to the point where she's making the best of it again, and a lot of this at her own doing. It's just a matter of what are they going to do with it.
You know what's weird, Mike? When she came up from NXT, and this might be a very brief description, but I think accurate. When that character moved to the main roster, that character lost its sweetness. It's lost its naivete and its innocence. And maybe that's just the nature of moving to the big time, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, look, and there's a total change in preparation, you know, from, you know, back at, you know, when Bayley was running in NXT. Keep in mind, NXT was also a show that we were recording every 3 to 4 weeks. You know what I mean? And we were bulk taping 4 episodes at a time. So the process of a TV day was altogether different. And I think you had a little bit more lead time to get comfortable with your creative and whatever tweaks may come. You know, the tweaks were kind of minimal on a TV day. Whereas now on the main show, sometimes you're not finding out what you're you're doing until moments before you bust through the curtain. You might get handed a rewritten promo, you know, 2 minutes before you're supposed to do it. So, you know, look, I think there are growing pains for those that come from NXT to the main shows, Raw and SmackDown, because of how, you know, the day-to-day runs at the live TV shows.
Yeah, no question about that. But I remember Nitros. This wasn't when I was on the air, Mike. But I remember Nitros where, you know, Hogan had total creative control, not just of his character, but of the whole show. So he would look, he would get to TV, you know, not exactly on time, shall we say. And he would look at the script and go, doesn't work for me, brother. And they would be running rewritten pages of the script out to the broadcast booth as the show was in progress. It was incredible. And I think there's an element of that with WWE now, although for different reasons. I just think there's a constant tweaking.
There is. I mean, look, sometimes ideas will come to you later in the day that you didn't have earlier in the day during production meetings or even your creative meetings leading up to your day of TV. Like, I understand it. Sometimes a good idea or a better idea is always going to come along and you have to roll with the punches. That's live TV. It happens. I used to have a saying that I would joke around with our TV crew. I would say, look, guys and, you know, girls, we're the victims of our own successes here. Like, there's a reason why we can get away with doing things the way we do it is because you have a crew and you have a roster of talent that has no equal and has no peer. And the reason why you're able to get these shows on the air is a testament to the men and women that work behind the camera and in front of the camera on Raw and SmackDown and NXT.
Yeah, we would have situations like when they were trying to like sort something out, they would say, okay, let's send Eddie and Dean out there, Guerrero and Malenko, and just have them do a match. And they would, you know, go out there and wing it. It would be the best match on the show. Talent covers all.
Yeah, 100%. Without a talented crew and a talented roster, and doing kind of live TV on the back of a bar napkin, you're gonna succeed if you've got a good group. If you don't know what you're doing, you may as well, you know, call it a day and on to the next. Mark, while we're on the topic of the women's division, we saw some news break during the week as well regarding Miss Zelina Vega, Thea Trinidad. Rumors have been circulating around the wrestling journalist that Thea / Zelina has signed a short-term deal with a promotion. I have a theory. You have a theory. What are you thinking inside that super genius head of yours?
Well, I don't know that I have a clear-cut theory. And by the way, Mike, one reason I'm considered a super genius, besides my registered IQ of 166, is because if you don't exactly take a stand, you can never be wrong. But in this case, here's the two things I see happening. Somebody throws a lot of money at her and Andrade to team up in another promotion. That said, I still maintain that Andrade has some sort of no-compete where he can't go to AEW. And I'm not sure that their act is as big a deal in Mexico or in Japan. Not that it wouldn't play well, but it wouldn't be the same as just jumping on another TV show.
Agreed.
So she's married to Aleister Black, if memory serves.
That is correct.
I think his character needs something, as in anything, God, please, I'm begging you. I mean, when your whole gimmick is sitting cross-legged and looking sullen, you need a little kick up the backside. Maybe Zelina Vega could go back to WWE, albeit without the ability to do anything on streaming for additional income, and really add a lot to her husband's career. And that's the card they could play to get her to come back, to give her husband a boost.
Well, so looks like we're aligned. And that's exactly what I see happening, Mark. I do see that Zelina Vega will or has already re-signed with WWE. And I could see a pretty cool packaging deal with Zelina and Aleister Black that I think will boost his career. And I think we'll just kind of get her back out there. It's funny how quickly people will forget about you when you are out of the public eye. And regardless of, you know, the perception in the wrestling world of WWE's product and everything else in between, there is nothing quite like the WWE promotional machine. And when it's behind you full force, you know, you dare say that it could kind of eclipse your Twitch streams and any other secondary source of income that you may get using that IP. Again, the argument about using WWE IP for outside ventures, we can break that down and talk about that another day. It's an interesting debate. I do see both sides of the coin. But in terms of Zelina Vega, who's still relatively young in the business, you know, especially on a grander scale, I think it's a smart move for her to go back to WWE. I think it's a smarter move for her to go back and to continue to build that brand and elevate her stature so that when she does decide to truly leave and seek fame and fortune and everything else elsewhere, it's going to mean that much more, because then she really will have that sort of elevated status as someone who made a name for themselves in WWE, as opposed to just being there for a cup of coffee, leaving over a disagreement regarding Twitch and what you were making. Let's elevate the star brand. Look, Twitch and all that other shit doesn't mean anything if you're a nobody. No one's going to pay money to watch me play video games. But if I had a promotional machine elevating me and my stature, that's a different story.
No, you're right on the money, Mike. And I think she's a real talent, by the way.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I think she has all the talent in that marriage, as a matter of fact. Well, okay, 80%. I'm being unfair.
All right.
But I think she can make it, and I think she would be wise to, like you said, go back and make the best of the machine. I don't think she was there long enough to have established herself outside of it. Now, I will say one quick statement, because you're right, that's a topic to debate at length at another time. But I think WWE is totally right in insisting that their IP, you know, be used to their benefit and not for an individual's benefit outside the company. That said, given that it's not a great time for wrestlers, they're not making as much as they were because of the lack of house shows and because WWE is cutting corners, even though there's no reason whatsoever, given the TV revenue, for WWE to cut any corners. I think barring them from using the IP is petty. Tom Petty. I just don't think it's a good look.
Again, a discussion for another time. But like I said, I'm with you on a lot of the stuff. Like I said, I see both sides of the coin, especially being on the inside. But, you know, I think we could have a pretty healthy and hearty discussion about that. Maybe we'll put that on the books for next week's show. Mark, what do you say?
Yeah, that'd be good. And let me just say, to make clear, WWE can do it at once.
And it's going to.
And they're not even wrong. And it reflects that WWE has never been interested in PR with their wrestlers. They're never concerned about going the extra mile to keep them happy. They should be happy to be there, I think, is the company's attitude. And the wrestlers won't band together. Hulk Hogan told me once years ago, the subject of a wrestler's union came up. And he said, brother, you could get every wrestler in the world in the same room, dude. And the minute the meeting broke up and everyone agreed to have a union, every single one of the boys would race to their promoter and try to make a better deal for himself.
it's the absolute truth, Mark. It really is in terms of just unity. But I will say, to your point about, you know, WWE is in the business of establishing stars, and they do a phenomenal job at that. I think what they learned, Mark, and I think they learned it with Hogan in the 90s, but they rebounded, obviously. But they learned it especially most recently with John Cena. It's very, very hard when you put the weight of the company on the back of just one performer. And I think they're in the mindset to build the brand overall, as opposed to now just building one set star that's going to be the quote-unquote face of the company. Because, Mark, you saw it, you know, when Cena, as he got older, was taking a reduced schedule. When John would, you know, would get injured and he was missing a significant amount of time because of his injuries, you saw the attendance at the live events decrease. You saw the merchandise sales go down. And John, for more or less the extent of his run, was the number one pusher of all merch. It's very, very hard to rest the success in the future of your company on just one person. And I think after John Cena, WWE did make a very hard pivot to more or less build the equity back into the brand itself, as opposed to just having one person front and center as the face and representation.
You are absolutely right. But the problem with that is when you don't have that one star on top, like Cena or Rock or Austin or whoever, you can't take the territory over the top.
Right.
You can't truly pop it without that megastar. And I agree, they're trying to not have a megastar, so they're beholden to nobody, and they're looking for consistency rather than the ups and downs. But when you do that, you don't get the ups.
Well, and you're spoiled, right? Because if you think about the longevity of John Cena's run, nobody in the history of the business, and that includes Bruno Sammartino, had a run like John did. John was pretty much working on top for, let's call it, 13, 14 years. And that's unheard of. That's absolutely unheard of. You can go back, right? Bruno's initial run as WWF champion or WWWF champion was what, Mark? 7 years, 7.5 years?
It was like 63 through 71, if memory serves.
Yeah, Backlund, again, he had a multi-year run, 4 to 5 years, whatever the case may have been. Hogan, from the inception of WrestleMania up until he left for WCW, Hogan, you know, lands in WWF in late 83. Hulkamania is established in 84, and he leaves in 93, so there's 9 years. Steve Austin, from Stone Cold Steve Austin to retirement, was about 5 or 6 years. The Rock from 97, from 96 when he debuted, that was the Survivor Series 96, to leaving at SummerSlam 2002 as the end of his full-time run, that was less than 6 years. So a guy like John Cena as your face and representation and your cash cow for that long a time, you're spoiled, and you almost have to teach yourself a new way of doing things, especially since, Mark, there really wasn't anybody in the back burner that was ready to come and take the cloak from John and kind of run as the superhero of the company. Roman wasn't there yet. He was on his way and they were trying to get him there, but he just wasn't quite there yet. So, you know, I can understand that, but like you said, you do need that face. You do need the person that's going to stand front and center and wave the WWE banner.
Now, you brought up Roman Reigns. We got to get to that, Mike.
Oh, it's by far, Mark, I think you and I can both agree that it's our favorite build and story and just overall centerpiece of WrestleMania at this point.
Yeah, and it got better. It got better. You have the Edge full-fledged heel turn. But is it really a heel turn? It was my favorite kind of heel turn, Mike. Because when Edge said, Daniel Bryan, this is my moment, you're trying to cut me out of it, you're usurping me of what I worked hard and came back for, even though Edge turned heel, Mike, he's 110% right. Everything he said about what Daniel Bryan has done to his match with Roman Reigns was correct. And I always wonder what fans think when the guy turns heel, but he's totally justified in doing so. That adds an interesting dynamic that sometimes can soil the bed, but I suspect it's working big time here.
Oh my God, just this is a masterclass in storytelling, and from all pieces of this equation, it's just unbelievable. That Edge promo, Mark, you hit it right on the head. What is better than a quote-unquote turn being heavily rooted in justification to the point where you almost can't label it a heel turn? You know what I mean? It's almost logic, but because it's, you know, quote-unquote on the dark side of the behavior of the force, you know what I mean? You have to put it in that heel classification. But my God, just unbelievable. And the way Edge delivered that promo was just absolutely masterful. I've been a big fan of Edge, obviously, for his entire career, but the way that he's come into his presentation of promos in the pandemic era have been next level. Even going back to last year's build for WrestleMania with his match with Randy Orton, just unbelievable. And just you can't say enough about Edge as a performer.
Yeah, no question. I like him better as a heel at this stage in his career and for this match. Because really, you could argue that he's a tweener. Like we agree, he turned heel, but he's justified in doing so. You have Reigns as the hardcore heel. You have Bryan as the somewhat flawed babyface. Because again, he poked his nose where it didn't belong, and that's a wrestling cliche. But as a fan, like I said, when I heard that Edge promo, I said, you know what? Who's Daniel Bryan think he is anyway?
Right.
Edge is right. Maybe Daniel Bryan's the bad guy, but then again, Daniel Bryan has always been, you know, a guy who fought hard for what he wants to achieve. You just get so many strands running in your head regarding the characters in this feud. Like you said, it's an excellent build. And even though I am not a fan of three-way matches at WrestleMania, well, you tell me, Mike. I think it positions every guy in the match, all three, to come out of WrestleMania with a lot of steam.
Oh, 100%, Mark. And let's even go back further, you know, to your point. Edge's justification, totally founded. But look at Daniel Bryan's gripe and his side of it going to the story as well. You know, Bryan earns the right in the Elimination Chamber you know, to face Roman Reigns. The whole the heel wrench is thrown in where Reigns is only going to face the winner of the match immediately following after the match. You know, they have a great little back and forth, which ultimately Roman comes out on top of. They go to Fastlane where Bryan gets the tap after the referee is bumped. You know what I mean? So you're just building all these credible arguments on every side that just makes it hard to kind of pick a side. But in terms of the booking and where you go on the other side of this, no one's going to walk out of there a loser. Regardless of however your finish falls at WrestleMania, whether you're getting a new champion, whether Roman retains, whatever the case may be, with these pieces, with this story, with this build, and the future that this story has with, you know, it's got legs, Mark, for months on end. You can take this all the way to SummerSlam if you wanted to. No one is coming out on the losing side. If anything, I think the intrigue and the interest in this story is only going to grow following WrestleMania, regardless of whatever the outcome is.
Mike, in the old days, you could have sent all three guys out on the road for house shows with a lot of steam. But now there's no house shows. Yeah. I give this guy a lot of credit. I'm a big-time fan and mark. But this has Paul Heyman's fingerprints all over it.
Well, I would say
the detail and the attention to everyone involved has Paul Heyman's fingerprints all over it.
100%. I wouldn't doubt that Heyman is part of this as well. But you've also got three very strong talent who know their characters, who have a phenomenal mind for the business, that I would imagine that Edge, Roman, and Daniel Bryan all have a good amount of say. And I would imagine the three of them, four with Mr. Heyman, are all working in conjunction to make this the absolute best piece of business that it can be. And it's just that right now. To me, this is the crown jewel of WrestleMania. This is the match that everyone has got their eyes on because you're just so invested in this story.
Yeah, and it's worth noting too, I don't mean to diminish the input and the wrestling minds of the three participants either, because those are all three real smart guys. You know what Heyman's great at? I'm sure, you know, the writers, you know, quote unquote, who put this together, I'm sure they think a lot of this was their idea. Okay, Paul is great at saying, you know, that's a great idea, but what if we just tweaked it a little bit like this?
Oh, yeah.
And he makes you think you came up with it. And I just, again, it has his fingerprints all over it, but to everyone involved, big time kudos, because, Mike, I can't remember a WrestleMania match I've anticipated to this degree for, it's got to be 2 or 3 years.
I would even go back further, you know, in terms of the build, especially with Bryan as your lovable babyface. Go back to WrestleMania 30 and the whole the Authority, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon feud with Daniel Bryan that would eventually lead to the main event of WrestleMania 30 being that triple threat with Batista, Bryan, and Randy Orton that culminated with Bryan winning the title. It's just a great, great story, Mark, and what a great story can do to really just attach you to what you were watching. It's there's no amount of words that you can put on it. It's just an indescribable feeling when you're invested and you're sitting there and you're watching something and you're actually, look, even though we know it's entertainment, you're kind of hanging on every move. There's no greater feeling.
Well, it's the best men's build in quite some time. I really liked Charlotte, Ronda, and Becky.
Oh yeah.
And Charlotte and Asuka. And yet the women were only on TV for 10 minutes Monday night.
Hopefully we're in the midst of that getting fixed, because it really is just a tragedy.
Well, it will now, Mike, because it's a reactionary situation, just like it was when the quote-unquote women's revolution started.
Yeah, I would agree, Mark, and I hope the reaction comes sooner rather than later. I mean, look, you've got women's tag championships, you've got a plethora of talented women. You know, if there's a battle royal or something that can come of it, I know the WrestleMania women's battle royal was something that had been established. Let's get that back into the mix, but we've got to get a showcase for the just unbelievably talented women that are part of that WWE locker room. Mark, so we've been a little WWE heavy for the show so far. Let's shift gears a little bit and switch over to the folks down in Jacksonville and AEW. You and I were talking before we went on the air about the Cody Rhodes QT Marshall build, and you actually had an awesome correlation that I didn't even think of, and I attribute that more to my age than anything, because I wasn't, you know, cognizant of what was going on when I saw it. But Mark, talk to me about QT and Cody and what you see.
You weren't even alive, Mike, when this happened. Cody Rhodes and QT Marshall, and it's my understanding, since we spoke last night, it's my understanding that Cody Rhodes has been studying this to take inspiration from it. It's Bruno versus Zbyszko from the 70s.
That's awesome.
When Larry Zbyszko was Bruno's protege, and he chafed being in his shadow, and he challenged Bruno to an exhibition match, just like Cody and QT are going to have, and he busted Bruno open with a chair, and they wound up having 36,000 see the blow-off in the steel cage at Shea Stadium. That's what they're doing. I recognize this very early in the process. There are a few differences, though. One is they haven't dragged the process out long enough. The reason Bruno and Zbyszko worked is because Larry's discontent was a slow burn before it peaked. And the biggest difference is QT Marshall ain't Larry Zbyszko, and Cody Rhodes ain't Bruno Sammartino. And I think very highly of Cody Rhodes, but I just don't see the point of wasting this angle on QT Marshall. He's just some guy. And if this doesn't get the favor for friends heat going in that AEW locker room where a lot of young guys don't get on TV nearly enough, well, this should light the fuse. You know, I understand that it's being executed on a decent basis. I just don't get trying to do something with QT Marshall. I know they want everyone to have a role, but this smacks of favor for friends, and they don't have enough TV time to do it. If Cody did it with somebody else, I would see it, but I don't see this.
Let me ask you, Mark, do you consider Cody Rhodes to be the centerpiece of AEW?
He's one of. Right now, I consider the centerpiece to be the pinnacle versus the inner circle and how that trickles down. AEW has segregated into a lot of gangs. And, you know, the Nightmare Factory, I guess, technically is one of them. I'm a big fan of Cody Rhodes, but I don't see him as... He's not their top guy, and I don't know how far down the list he is with their top guys. But I do think he's very good. I think he's a great wrestling mind. I think he thinks he's assuming the mantle of his father. Time will tell with that, as it always does. But I just don't get the thing with QT Marshall. If he had been, let's say, Mike, he had been tutoring or mentoring Jungle Boy or Sammy Guevara, although he's in the inner circle thing. Brian Pillman Jr. You know, somebody with more friggin' potential than QT Marshall.
Right.
I mean, Larry blew up. I mean, Larry was a big star after that. No matter how this plays out, QT ain't going to be a big star. He just doesn't have it.
Now, do you think this is setting up more for a heel turn for Cody or a heel turn for QT?
Actually, if they did a heel turn for Cody, it would make more sense.
But do you
because you could go someplace with that. But don't you think the way it's set up points to QT turning or maybe Arn turning as the referee?
Yeah, I think somehow Cody's got to walk away the babyface. And what makes me think that is last week, I believe it was, on AEW Dynamite, they made the announcement of the Cody and Brandy reality show that's going to chronicle Brandy's pregnancy and the Rhodes family's road, if you will, to parenthood. So I kind of think for the sake of promotion and keeping that a viable asset for the company, you probably need Cody to be a babyface in order to do that. Would you think?
I do. That's a real good point, Mike. So I think Cody comes out of the babyface, and I think, you know, we're going to see the worst case scenario. QT Marshall's going to come out of it still being QT Marshall. And I just don't, if I'm a young guy in that room, I just say, what the frig?
Right.
And this wasn't supposed to happen there. This was supposed to be the opportunity for young guys who weren't overexposed. Not that QT Marshall's been overexposed, but there's a reason for that. We see Christian with a match this week. He's going to be in the main event picture against Kenny Omega relatively soon, it seems like. AEW is not as advertised. That's not to say it's not doing well. I enjoy watching it. It's my most regular watch. And I pay great attention to their detail, which is considerable. But it's not what Tony Khan said it would be. It's not the sports-based, results-based, everybody on equal footing promotion with him never on TV that we were told it would be.
That was quite a promo he cut for himself on that first episode of Dark Elevation. But it does seem like, not to say that Tony's gone back on his words, because look, businesses evolve and sometimes, you know, you gotta kind of shift and move into a new direction and plan. you know, Tony has pivoted from a lot of what he did say AEW would be in their mission statement and all those press conferences that they had done leading up to the launch of AEW itself, you know, with coming out and having a presence on screen, even the stuff that he's been doing at Impact. The stuff that he's been doing at Impact has been very reminiscent of, and I think for folks on YouTube, you'd be able to see this because this was done in such a smaller market at the time. Mark, you remember when Vince was going down to the Memphis in the USWA as the heel big-time promoter from up north and bringing down Randy Savage and all these big stars to work Lawler down in Memphis. You know, you get a feel of that with what Tony is trying to do up at Impact with Scott DeMore and the group over there. But even just bringing in these big stars, and like you said, bringing in folks that have made a name for themselves, and maybe they're a little bit on the later side of Father Time's clock, but you're bringing in these older stars to take away, you know, time, right? I perceive that is what the younger folks feels, that their time is being taken away and monopolized by older stars that are coming in. You know, looks like the mission statement might need a couple red lines and addendums.
Yeah, and he can do what he wants. I mean, when a rich kid buys a toy, if it's a Tonka truck, he can ride it around the floor any way he wants, put it in reverse, whatever. It's his promotion, and really he's done a good job. It's just not what he said it would be. And I think there are those in the company who kind of chafe at it not being what he said it would be. And if I'm the young guys, I look at the QT Marshall thing, I look at the Christian thing, I look at the Paul White thing, and I said, boy, this isn't what we were told. Then again, if he didn't lie, he wouldn't be a wrestling promoter.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark, and this has kind of just come to mind as we're sitting here and talking about this, and I've drawn a little bit of a correlation of my own. Do you think this Cody-Tony Khan combination, because look, I know the Young Bucks and Omega and everybody else were part of the quote-unquote build, but, you know, I know Cody. You know, I spent time with Cody as he was coming up in the business, and obviously I learned a lot from his dad in the early days of NXT. You know, I would imagine that Cody's probably the most influential voice of the group. I would imagine that Cody's probably the most forward-thinking of the group in terms of an overall business sense. And I get the feeling, do you think this pairing of Tony Khan and Cody Rhodes is the second coming of Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett?
Oh, I hope not. I don't know.
But look at the recipe. I mean, look at the recipe,
Jeff,
Mark.
Jeff was a good performer. I thought underrated in some ways. I mean, we're talking about Jeff the performer or Jeff the guy who ran a wrestling company.
I think you got to put A and B together, Mark, because you know that was part of the early build of TNA was Jeff as the centerpiece of it, was it not?
I don't think Cody is pushing himself as much as Jeff did, do you?
I do, and I think he's doing it in a very subtle, backhanded way. You know, you can go all the way back to, right, there's the stipulation where Cody cannot challenge for the AEW world title now. Cody's still at the top in my eyes with the way, just kind of seeing how their programming lays out and his positioning. I mean, the fact that the guy's got his own separate entrance and doesn't come out of one of those tubes and everything else. I mean, Cody's entrance has more pyro than that explosion, the explosive ring match had for his entrance. I think Cody...
It would have to.
Yeah, I think Cody presents himself at the forefront. While you may not think he is based on the creative and what you're seeing on the TV, I think Cody is positioning himself for a very, very long-term play. And again, you have to keep in mind, this is somebody who grew up at the knee of one of the most brilliant minds in the business, and that's the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
You brought up a real good point about how that stipulation says he can't fight for the world title, because it positions him as the guy who's so good he doesn't need to fight for the world title.
Exactly. It's almost like a Piper-esque sort of deal, right? Like there was always the argument that
question.
Roddy never needed a title.
And eventually, you know, he'll challenge for the world title. Eventually.
Absolutely.
I believe that. The way to do that is you have some kind of thing where, I don't know, they don't have a Royal Rumble, but say they had something similar to that where the winner of a tournament or whatever gets a shot at the world title and he wins it and then, quote unquote, he has to break his own stipulation because he earned it. Something like that. But yeah, that's an interesting point. Let me ask you a question, Mike. To this point in Cody's career and looking at Jeff Jarrett's whole career, who's the bigger star?
At this point, I think you'd have to argue in terms of star, I would say Cody. In terms of accomplishing what they've accomplished in the business, I would say Jeff.
I would say Jeff's the bigger star to this point. Because, you know, Cody wasn't a big star at the big show in WWE. And Jeff was always positioned very near the top. Intercontinental champion, the singing gimmick. Yeah. He was always, you know, pert near but not plumb. So since he did it at the biggest level, until AEW is the same level, I give Jeff a slight edge.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, look, I think Cody got some pretty favorable positioning. I mean, the creative wasn't always the best for him. You know, you look at the whole Stardust gimmick and what it could have been and what it became. It's just a shame. But, you know, Cody made it the best of what he could, and it just speaks to the kind of performer that Cody is. But I think going back to the correlation, right, in terms of just, like, the business moves that are being done, right, Mark, you remember the early days of TNA, young AJ Styles, guys like Elix Skipper, Christopher Daniels, Petey Williams, and the rest of that Team Canada team, Bobby Roode, guys like that. You had this phenomenal young group of talent that was, you know, causing this groundswell, and they were making noise. You know what I mean? Were they a viable threat to WWE? I don't think so, but they made a lot of noise. And then they brought in the established quote unquote old timers, right? You did the main event mafia angle, and you're bringing all these guys in. And at the same time, you still had Jeff, who everyone knew was kind of at the head of the parade, you know, on top for a lot of that time. I think AEW is trending in that direction, and you can see it.
Yeah, I say that hesitatingly, but Mike, I've been saying since we started this podcast, and even dating back before on Twitter, I turn on AEW, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I turn on AEW because I want to see Jungle Boy work.
Yes.
I want to see Brian Pillman Jr. work. I want to see Sammy Guevara work. I want to see the guys who aren't overexposed work. MJF, and MJF's a very top guy, but I want to see him because I'm not tired of him. FTR, I think they're a bit full of themselves, but that's the gimmick. I want to see them work. I don't want to see recycling. And let me say one last thing about Cody, too, if I can, Mike.
Sure.
If Cody is what he thinks he is, and I'm not saying he's not, but if he is what he thinks he is, he can pull this QT Marshall thing off and elevate QT Marshall. Because nobody ever heard of Larry Zbysko before Bruno elevated him. And then he became a star for decades. Let's see what happens to QT Marshall after this angle plays out.
Well, and that's what the business is all about, right, Mark? You got to make others in order for you to make yourself. Because if you beat nobody, then you're a nobody.
Yeah, the Larry Z thing was unbelievable. I mean, if you haven't yet, watch some of the YouTube stuff on that.
Oh, I've seen it. It's just one of those things that never stuck out of my mind just because I didn't grow up there. But I definitely did get eyes on it, and I'm familiar with the story. But when you said it, it a light bulb went off, and I was like, oh, my God, he's 100% right. That's exactly what we're seeing unfold right now.
Well, and let me tell you a little sidebar on the Zbysko Bruno thing. And people are going to say, oh, you're lying because you don't like Bruno. I don't like Bruno, but I'm not lying. Bruno wasn't a great draw in Pittsburgh. He did okay. He was, you know, he sold out the Garden in New York because he was a great draw. And the ethnic thing in New York, you know, and I can't take away from Bruno as a performer and as a draw. But in Pittsburgh, he drew okay, even as champ, because he was the guy we saw at Giant Eagle.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was the guy we saw at the grocery store. Whereas Backlund drew huge. Backlund versus Valentine, the first match in the blow off in a cage, were the second and third biggest crowds in the history of the old hockey rink here, the Civic Arena. The number one crowd was Dusty Rhodes in a rare NWA show in Pittsburgh, wins the cage match final of the Bunkhouse Stampede against Big Bubba Rogers. Okay? But Bruno versus Zbysko packed the arena for all three matches because, oh, wait a minute. The jerk from North Allegheny turned on the guy from Westview. We got to see what happens here.
Yeah,
it just made local more local, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Better and local. But again, after that whole angle, Larry Z's career took off in like forever.
Yeah, I mean, the living legend himself, Larry Zbysko, right? It was just a great building, just a great story there. Look, you're going to see shit recycled a lot, Mark. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of what you do at that presentation
and
when
okay.
You do recycle.
That's okay.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you're going to see stuff that you've seen in the past. There's only so many good stories that you can pull out and kind of adapt and modify, right? Like, look at Hollywood now. There's nothing original coming out of Hollywood. At least in the business, you're afforded the opportunity to really – put your own spin on things, and that's based on the characters you have. And I think they could do something good with this Cody QT thing. So I'm excited to see where it goes, and I'm excited to see if QT can kind of step up, because like you said, this is an opportunity for QT Marshall to establish his name, because he is a relatively unknown guy unless you followed his career through the indies.
I'm real skeptical, Mike. If he coulda, he woulda already. I think this is wasting a real good angle and a guy who can't make anything of it.
Yeah, I guess the proof will be in the pudding when we get there, Mark. So kind of shifting gears back to the folks at WWE. Last night was the second to last Monday Night Raw before we get to WrestleMania. And something happened on Raw last night that sent a lot of shockwaves through the Twitter world. And I was kind of keeping track last night while I was watching, Mark, and we both kind of agree. But Bobby Lashley and MVP's group, the Hurt Business, was dissolved last night. And we are both of the opinion that that was a move that was done prematurely and done entirely wrong.
I don't like it. With the Hurt Business, the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. It allowed MVP, who is such a good talker, to make the most out of all the talents involved. I just don't get it. I didn't get breaking up the New Day either, even though that was done under, you know, terms that were not nefarious at all. And Big E just went his way as a singles guy. I don't think any performer, any individual, Mike, in either of those groups is better off for not being in the group.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Mark, I always thought, you know, they could really go on a run, especially after Bobby won the world championship. For younger fans, you have an opportunity to reestablish an amazing talent in Shelton Benjamin. I think Shelton Benjamin is probably one of the most unsung heroes in the game right now, and probably for a good majority of his career. I don't think folks really appreciated just how great Shelton Benjamin actually is. And at the same time, you had the opportunity to bring up a young, awesome talent like Cedric Alexander. Mark, I was producing the Cruiserweight Classic tournament years ago that we did out of the performance, out of a Full Sail University. Cedric Alexander tears the house down. I want to say it was Cedric Alexander and Kota Ibushi in this match. I could be wrong. There's just a lot of wrestling in the brain. Cedric loses the match, but at the end of it, and we wound up releasing this as a digital exclusive, the ovation this kid got and the chant of sign him now and everything else in between led to him ultimately getting a job, because he is just that good. And I think as part of the Hurt Business, he was starting to get the character side of things. He was starting to get the entertainment side of sports entertainment, because the work and the sports part, he had down pat. This Cedric was given a chance to really kind of shine and get a feel for who he is and who the character is. And now that the Hurt Business was disbanded for really no reason last night, you kind of just put these guys in the lurch. And I think they added more to the presentation as Bobby Lashley as champion. Bobby's great, and I think the Hurt Business just gave him a little bit extra, because now he had goons to kind of do his bidding for him also, do his bidding for him as well. What's better than a big jacked up dude having lackeys do his ass kicking for him?
Yeah, I think they dissolved it prematurely, and the losers in this will be Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, and that's really sad. Lashley's still going to be Lashley, still going to get a big push. MVP is such a great talker. He is foolproof. But I still think MVP and Lashley were better in the group, and now Alexander and Benjamin will just be presented as cast-offs from the Hurt Business. And mark my words, they'll be on TV for a little bit, then they'll be off TV, then they'll be out of work. I just see how it's going to work.
What'd you think, Mark, of the creative for last night in terms of Bobby putting the bounty out on Drew McIntyre's head, and the, you know, whoever takes Drew out of WrestleMania will be rewarded with a championship match at WrestleMania? It just seemed very, very, very odd to me.
When Harley put the bounty on Rick before the first Starrcade, who showed up to collect it? I think it was Dick Slater and somebody else. Yeah. I don't think this will quite resonate that.
That was the spike pile driver, yeah?
Again, Mike, it didn't make sense, because you fired the guys who would collect the bounty for free.
Right.
You wouldn't have to pay them. So now you fired them. You have a bounty out. It just didn't make sense to me. None of it makes sense to me. I think they screwed up a good thing, just like they did with the New Day. And one thing I do want to point out, though, you know what angle I'm really liking? I'm really liking Shane McMahon calling Braun Strowman a dummy. Let me tell you why.
Oh, okay. I want to hear this because, man, I'm on the opposite side of this one.
Oh, no, no. The whole thing's terrible. Shane McMahon having Braun Strowman bump for him, you know, which is going to happen, having a competitive match where Braun didn't sell for anybody for like a year. That's stupid. But Shane McMahon's the smart guy bullying the big meathead dumb guy.
Right.
Speaking as the smart kid who way back when was bullied by the big meathead dumb guy, I feel like Shane McMahon's getting even for me.
Vindication and the tables have turned.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So from that standpoint, like when he had the crudely Photoshop thing of Braun with the dunce cap, I'm going, yeah, Shane, give it to that big dummy. I like it.
See, that's the stuff that's great heat. And I mean, look, Shane McMahon is a phenomenal character. And look, the stuff and the moments that he's left us all with throughout the year just speak to the performer that he is as well. But, you know, I think a lot of the build has been silly, Mark. And it's almost, I took this away from last night and I made a joke texting with our buddy Sam Roberts that it seemed like some of the stories from last night were almost as if they were written by a 5-year-old. You've got Sheamus wrestling.
Well, that one for sure.
Well, you've got Sheamus wrestling Matt Riddle for the U.S. title, or Riddle now, excuse me, at WrestleMania because Sheamus bumped Matt off his scooter backstage. And
well,
then,
you know what that is, Mike? Riddle is to scooter as Darby Allin is to skateboard. That is their reaction. I'm serious. Yeah. That is their reaction to Darby Allin.
No, I get it, but to me it just seems so childish. Like, we're going to have a match because you pushed me off my scooter. Not that that was the verbiage, but again, that's what you saw on TV. And then the other side of it is, we're going to fight at WrestleMania because you called me stupid. You know what I mean? Like, the buildup with the slime and everything else in between. If a lot of it was based off of what Shane did last night, great. But I don't. To me, this match, I think, has made it a very not-watch sort of moment coming up at WrestleMania. It'll be a quote-unquote popcorn match. And I'll be interested to see what the people's response is to it. I just hope to God, Mark, that dumb train whistle and engine that they've been playing over the arena when Braun does his charge around the ring, I hope that goes away, because my God, is that silly.
Well, I'm rooting for the smart guy against the dumb guy, Mike. That's always been my nature. Yeah, everything you say is true, and with both those matches, 90% of it is silly. I gave you the silver lining in the Shane build. Let me give you the silver lining in the Sheamus build. It feels like they're reloading Sheamus. And I think that's good because I think he's an excellent performer and I think he should be reloaded. And I'm not a big Riddle fan. If it's at Riddle's expense, I'm all for that too.
See, I think Sheamus has been built and is on the verge of being rebuilt, Mark. I do agree with that. I think that they're actually trying to establish Riddle here. I'm a big, big Riddle fan. I think Riddle, phenomenal on the sell when he's in the ring. I think he's got great work. His character is entertaining, you know, just kind of playing the affable, you know, Spicoli stoner from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, except now he's got a scooter, not a cool Euro van. It'll be cool to see if this really is the platform to make Riddle, because it looked like for a while they were kind of squashing him again, but, you know, by all appearances, by having him get his ass kicked by Lashley and the rest of the Hurt Business. But you actually wound up making Riddle while you were elevating Bobby to get him ready for that WWE Championship run. So I think we're going to see Riddle coming out of WrestleMania in a little bit more of an elevated position. This is a guy that's got legit credentials, a guy that was a phenomenal welterweight fighter in the UFC. He's got a pretty established resume on the indies, had a great run at NXT, and I think he's going to have some fun here. And I think the fact that he's got a strong character that people are getting behind, you're going to see some good things out of Riddle in the future, and I think WrestleMania is the starting point.
Hey, one thing I want to touch on, you mentioned NXT. Is there potential there for Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly to upstage everything at WrestleMania? Could NXT TakeOver be the big show of the week because of that match? Because with the exception of Edge, Bryan, and Reigns, I think the single best build for any match for that big week for the WWE has been Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly.
Mark, 100%. I would say across the board, I would argue that TakeOver probably has the better and stronger build going into WrestleMania week than WrestleMania does itself. You've got great stories, great talent. This Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly match, man, I mean, after that contract signing segment that they did last week, if you're not fired up for this thing, then you need to check your pulse, because holy shit, the dogs were basically just waiting to be let off the chain to go at it, because I just love the energy. I love the emotion. emotion. I loved, you know, the I love the portion. There was one point where Adam Cole was addressing Regal during that promo, Mark, and he had his eyes just burning right through Kyle O'Reilly, and it was so fucking good. Just a great story that's got so much history to it, not just within NXT, but even beyond then, because these guys tore it up together at PWG and everywhere else they worked.
Yeah, and it's funny. I want to get back to that Strowman McMahon thing for a second. Strowman and Shane. When I watched them out there last night on Raw, I didn't buy for a second that they were legitimately mad at each other.
No.
They're playing a role and it's visible. I think Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, when I watched them face to face, I feel like it could explode and boil over and result in legitimate violence. That big scramble at the end of the contract signing was so believable. I popped totally for it. Regal taking a bump was tremendous. Again, aside from the Reigns match at Mania, the best build of anything done by WWE recently.
And I think it's going to be cool, and I think those guys have got such a sharp mind. Like, I think at TakeOver Stand and Deliver, you're going to see a fight that happens to have a wrestling match mixed into it, and it's going to be really cool for the presentation.
Well, right, they'll settle the personal issue, and I hate to keep crapping on this match, but the way the Young Bucks should have with Jericho.
Yeah, yeah.
And MJF, you know what I mean? They will go in there, and they won't go for 5 stars. They'll go for passion and presentation and violence and logic.
Yeah, I like
that. Should be the first thing anybody thinks of when they put together a wrestling match and a program to build up to the match. Logic.
Yeah, what am I thinking going into this match? How is this going to affect my presentation? How it's going to affect the way I work? You know, there's a lot more to it than just mean mugging and throwing a couple of glares at the camera. You're 100% right. But Mark, I like the overall build for this two-night NXT Stand and Deliver, and I also like the way it's positioned. I like the fact that they're advertising just 4 matches for each show, so we're probably going to get, you know, something in the, you know, 2 to 2.5 hour range, I would imagine. First night being on USA, the second night being on Peacock. I think it's going to be great. And like I said, I think just the performances are going to leave WrestleMania kind of in a position where they're going to have to compete coming from behind. And outside of that triple threat that we spoke about for the Universal Championship with Roman, Bryan, and Edge, you know, what does WrestleMania have to offer that's going to be able to compete with what NXT is doing?
Mike, if you made me pick the 3 best matches for that week in advance, my top 3 would be Reigns, Bryan, and Edge. And this is in no particular order. Reigns, Bryan, and Edge. Karrion Kross and Finn Balor.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly.
I tell you what.
Those have had the best presentations, and I believe those 3 matches have the best in-ring potential.
That Finn Balor Karrion Kross match is something I think that's actually been a little overshadowed by this build to Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, and not in terms of presentation. I think NXT's done a great job of giving those guys equal footing, but I think the folks haven't really gotten a chance to really latch themselves onto Karrion Kross because of the time he spent away with injury, but WWE did a great job of keeping him represented on the NXT TV show. I think going in there with the best Finn Balor that I think anyone's ever seen, going all the way back to his work in New Japan and everywhere else in between, this version of Finn Balor with this absolute star in the making, Karrion Kross, is going to be a huge, huge piece that is going to leave people talking for a little bit. I think this is going to be a potential match of the year candidate, Mark, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of folks.
Well, again, it's about presentation. This Finn Balor reminds me of Prince Devitt in New Japan.
Yeah.
Not the ballerina who was all entrance and occasional goofy demon character in the so-called big time. This Finn Balor, again, Mike, he's logical. He makes sense. Like that ballerina stuff he did with all the jacket straightening, you know what that made him look like? A dork. He looked like a dork. Now he looks like a badass. And you know what you do in NXT that you couldn't in WWE? You forget that he's 5'3" and 120 whatever. No. He looks like a killer the way he's presented in NXT. He comes off like somebody who could beat your ass.
Yeah. Well, and in fairness, he looks like someone that can beat your ass, which is even better. I mean, look, if I were him, I wouldn't be wearing a shirt and I'd be fixing my leather jacket so that you can see my abs all the time, too. But that's a topic for a different day.
Oh, it went too far on Raw, though. or was it SmackDown? I forget. It was so unmemorable. It's like Nakamura. They made Nakamura's entrance and Balor's entrance so epic that when it was over, it felt like that was all there was. You know, they almost went too far with it. They became entrances and not much else.
I see your point. And look, I was hands-on in creating a lot of those entrances with the folks down at NXT.
So it was your fault.
I had other people to blame. but, you know, I think you're 100% right, Mark. But again, that all goes back to, you know, what we've spoken about today and in other shows. It's just that matter of translation, right? When Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura are doing these elaborate 3-minute entrances and putting on a 25-minute, 30-minute masterpiece, you forget the entrance just becomes the garnish on Awesome Steak. But when you're on Raw and SmackDown and your entrance is 2 to 3 minutes long and your match is an underwhelming minute 30 through no fault of your own, it's just a matter of the time that you're allotted, you become known as more of an entrance and less of a performer. So I totally see that 100%. Man, Nakamura, that's a guy that I wish it seemed like they were priming him up for something big. But, you know, again, he was being primed up to prime up Seth Rollins for his match at WrestleMania. But that's a guy that you just wish would get let off and let him just kind of eat and do his thing.
Well, and Shinsuke came to America to make WWE money and live in America and have that experience. And that's about what he got.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it's not quite as bad as when Okada was in TNA, but it's similar.
Yeah, you could make that argument. I just, you know, I really hope that there's a resurgence for Shinsuke soon, because
I hope so too.
Just an unbelievable performer, Mark, an unbelievable talent. And then, you know, look, as we're kind of wrapping up here, Mark, before we get into the questions from our friends on the Twitterverse, I do want to talk about another piece of business that we touched on last week with Bad Bunny getting the opportunity to take on The Miz at WrestleMania and WWE bringing in folks from the outside. So last week on SmackDown, as part of this whole Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens story that's building to WrestleMania, found out that Logan Paul is going to have a presence on SmackDown this week. Logan Paul, big phenom and sensation on the YouTube. He's gotten in the boxing ring and done things just like his brother Jake Paul has. Logan's actually supposed to box Floyd Mayweather later this year. He's got a massive following, Mark, in the digital space. 5.9 million followers on Twitter, 18.9 million on Instagram, and 22.9 on his YouTube platform. This is a guy that can bring new eyes to WWE, and as much as people are going to shit on it, I am all for it. I'm all about it. Get him in there. Let's grow the business. Let's grow the product, and let's see where it goes from there.
Now, is it Logan Paul or Jake Paul? Who's going to be on WWE?
Logan's going to be on WWE.
Because I am totally unfamiliar with them. 110%. I'm 60 years old. I don't care. And Bad Bunny, I'm vaguely aware of who he is. I think it's silly that Miz has to sell for him, but you know what? Miz has to sell for him. I am in total agreement with using those guys. It does get new eyes on the product. It gets mainstream attention even more so than WWE has been getting in recent years. I hate it, but I do it. Does that make any sense? It's not what I want wrestling to be. But I do understand that in this era, it's what wrestling has to be.
It serves a purpose. And I think, you know, right, we've said it a bunch of times, you're not going to get back folks that you've lost, viewers that you've lost. You just may as well kiss them goodbye. What are we doing to bring folks in? And guys like, you know, Bad Bunny and now Logan Paul, who's just a phenom on the internet and YouTube, which has become such a massive source of consuming content. Bring these guys in, get their viewers. I mean, look, they have a following that even if you got a tenth of, you know, Logan Paul's YouTube subscribers, you're bumping up your ratings exponentially. So bring them in, use them well, have a good time, get all the pub you can get off of it. I mean, look, the Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin match at WrestleMania would not have had the same effect had it not been for Mike Tyson being part of that build story and the aftermath.
No question. I mean, Mike Tyson's a bit of a different element than Logan, Jake Paul, whoever it is, and Bad Bunny. But yeah, I agree with it. And again, I see the use for it. Hey, when we had David Arquette in WCW, I saw the use for that. He was in a movie that featured WCW performers that, you know, wasn't a major hit, but it wasn't, you know, chopped liver either. We just went too far with it. Way too far with it. And the shame of it is David's a really good guy.
And he's still grinding.
And always be remembered as the guy that never should have been world champion, but he's a really good guy. He was married to Courtney Cox at the time. He brought her on, and they were really nice people. No airs, no assuming at all. So I liked working with David, but they, you know, as long as you don't go too far.
No.
But then again, I'm sure Bad Bunny's going to beat Miz, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and look, here's the thing, Mark. I think what makes a lot of this palatable is you're bringing in guys that have a respect for the business, and I think that's something that resonates well with fans. I think, to me, that's what, you know, connected folks a lot to what Pat McAfee was able to do when he was with NXT, is that first and foremost, regardless if he was a heel or a babyface, you saw, and Pat doesn't hide the fact of it on the show and anything he does, Pat has the utmost respect for the business. And that goes such a long way, not only behind the scenes, but it resonates genuine with the audience. And I think a guy like Bad Bunny, while he's not somebody you expect to be, you know, in a WrestleMania match, you know the guy has respect for the business. You know the guy has love for the business. And I get the feeling you're going to see the same thing with Logan Paul. Whether he's a fan or not, you know, these guys, I'm sure, have an appreciation for what the men and women put themselves through on a weekly basis and nightly once the world gets back to the way things were before the pandemic. So I'm all for it. And I think when you're using the right elements, it just makes the presentation that much better. Because look, if it's something like, I'd imagine that even though she claims to be a fan, folks weren't thrilled with Maria Menounos having a match at WrestleMania. Snooki had a fucking match at WrestleMania. I think things are going to kind of change with these celebrities that are coming in from the outside that really do appreciate and love the business of professional wrestling.
Well, I give Bad Bunny credit. He threw a heck of a punch last night when he knocked Miz down.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, my first response was, Bad Bunny throws a better punch than Don Moxley.
Oh, shots fired.
Mox is great. One of the best all-around performers going. He just, his punch isn't good. Come on, admit it. His punch isn't good.
It's a little loose. I'll give you that. It's definitely a bit of a loose.
Hey, I got, before we get to the tweets, I got a my favorite celebrity story from WCW I want to tell.
Let's hear it.
You remember Ernest Miller, the Cat.
The Cat.
Who did the karate gimmick, and he also did the James Brown gimmick, where he would, you know, dance, and then he'd get covered by the cape and pop back to life, the whole James Brown thing.
Yep.
So one time we had James Brown at a pay-per-view, and he was going to go to the ring and dance with the Cat afterward. And in WCW fashion at that time, it was a surprise. Obviously, you bill that in advance, so maybe a few more people tune in.
Sure.
But it was a surprise. So James Brown is at the show, and a PA comes around in catering and says, if you meet James Brown and you want his autograph or want to shake his hand, he's okay with that, or take a picture, he's fine. The only thing he asks is that you call him Mr. Brown. And so the PA walks away, and I said to whoever was at the table with me, I don't know what, because I'm a big James Brown fan. I said, I don't know what I don't care what we have to call him. He's a bad motherfucker. and about 10 seconds later, Mike, I get a tap on the shoulder, and I turn around, and it's James Brown who had overheard me. And he goes, see, this Cat knows.
That's awesome.
He slapped five, and he moves on. That is one of the greatest memories of my life. I will take that to my grave.
That is awesome. Hey, man, not many folks get that sort of acknowledgement from the legend.
Oh, it's awesome.
All right, Mark, what do you say? We dive in. We asked folks through our Twitter handle, at the BWSP, to hit us up with some questions, stuff that you want to kind of get the Mark Madden and Mike Mansouri take on. So we asked you to use that hashtag, AskTheBSWP, and come up with a couple questions, and we're going to dive right in, Mark. Our first question comes from at Austin Urch. Does at Real Britt Baker need to be the next AEW champion?
Well, Britt's their best female performer, and they have a few good ones, okay, but they need more of them. That's what they need, is a deeper roster of quality before that world championship means as much as it should, quite honestly. But I think they're getting there. I think Britt's one of the best things on their show, and we've talked about her match with Thunder Rosa is making history. I just think she needs to be near the top of the entire promotion in terms of presentation. But I don't think the belt matters that much that it matters she has it just now.
No, and you know, to your point, Mark, you just need, if she's going to be your strong heel, you need strong baby faces on the other side for her to work, and they're just not there with established talent that have the credentials to really help build somebody. But you know, look, I think it's going to be a great build for Britt, and I think when she gets there, it's going to mean a lot. And she's someone that I think is talented enough to take that torch and just kind of run with it and have a good time and establish that AEW women's division.
She does a lot with the little too. I mean, she's on TV a lot less than you would think.
Yeah, but
what she does is so memorable. that you think she's on all the time. And yeah, that's a key with the limited TV time they have down there. And I want to say, too, her and Shivani have such great chemistry.
They really do, don't they?
Such great chemistry. I know both them, and I've discussed one with the other, and they know it. They just know there's something special when they're on camera together.
Yes, look, she's an undeniable talent. I think you get the right pieces around her to help build her, and who knows what sort of heights she's going to reach. Dr. Britt Baker's future, look, there, it goes without saying, you and I are just massive fans of the doctor.
Yep.
And I can't wait to see what the road kind of has for her coming up in the next couple of months, because I think, look, you're going to get great.
One last thing about Doc. And I'm not suggesting this happen or anticipate this happens.
All right.
If she was in WWE with the talent they have for her to work with, she would be even more highly regarded.
I agree. She was an alternate. I can't remember if it was the first or the second Mae Young Classic, but Dr. Britt was an alternate. I was really hoping that she would get in because, look, I think we knew even back then that there was something there. I think she just may have been a little too green in the business to really get that sure spot, but she's worked her way up, Mark. Second question comes from Florida Mike at Mike_Atlantic. What do you think it would take to get the ratings back up into the 3.0 or 4.0 range?
A time machine. it's just never going to happen. That just is never going to happen. And part of it is that, as you mentioned earlier, Mike, they don't want to create that one star to rise above the brand. And to get that kind of rating, you need a guy or a woman that rises above the brand. And they just don't want that. Yeah. They'd rather be safe. And I get it. And when you stir in all the other entertainment options and all the different ways of watching wrestling, I think literally the most you could hope for, I think a high point would be a 3. I think if something got to a 3 again, what are Raw and SmackDown doing right now?
Raw's probably doing about a 1.7 to 1.9. I think SmackDown's in the same neighborhood, sometimes a little bit more. I think that's the advantage of having the Fox broadcast, but that's kind of the ballpark that you're playing in.
I think if you got a really hot run and somebody did rise above, however temporarily, you could get to a 3, but I think that's the ceiling.
Yeah, I would say, look, there's a lot out there, not only in the wrestling space, Mark. There's just a lot of content to be consumed, and there's just a lot of different ways that people's attention can be pulled. And I think that's the main thing, right, is no matter, even it sounds sexy to position company against company because of what WCW and WWF went through back in the 90s and we all got to witness. It's different now because there are just so many different ways. Everything can get your attention. So yep, Realistically, you're competing with everything from phones to tablets to smart TVs, computers, everything else in between. Everything is competition to get attention and get eyeballs.
Don't forget Pornhub.
There, you're right. I'm more of a Brazzers guy, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, Pornhub's free. You're crazy.
Adam Hagen at Sticks Adam asks, what do you guys think that Impact Wrestling has to do to get more eyes on their company and to be talked about more?
I don't know. And I wish I knew the answer because I'd tell Scott D'Amore and Don Callis because I love their product.
I do too.
I really do. They have a few hidden gems down there. I've talked at length about Ace Austin, who I remain convinced is the best wrestler outside AEW or WWE, in North America anyway. Josh Alexander is brilliant.
Chris Bay.
I like the pairing of Austin and Fulton.
Yeah.
I really like the North when Ethan Page was teamed with Josh Alexander before Page went to All Elite. I think their presentation's great. I think their booking's great. I like so much about it. I don't know. I don't know what Ring of Honor has to do to get more viewers either. I just think the saturation dictates it's not going to happen.
I think so. I think, Mark, though, we talked about the partnership between AEW and Impact and how Impact had the most to benefit from, and I don't see it yet. I think recently it came out that, whatever the most recent Impact that Omega was on, the ratings didn't bump at all. They were just plateaued for Impact Wrestling. I think what would help those guys, you can go back to the ECW invasion angle from the late 90s with that whole, cross feud with Waller and everybody else where ECW would show up on Raw. You had ECW guys getting match time on Raw to kind of put the brand on display. I think we should be doing that and seeing that at at AEW, whether it be on Dynamite or Dark or Dark Elevation, let's get some matches in there that are represented solely by Impact talent, and let's get the word out there. If the whole point of this partnership is to elevate Impact and to kind of grow your own little network that's very NWA-esque, you got to elevate these guys up, because otherwise you're sending them into the abyss to work where no one's going to see.
And in that vein, I would like to see one of the AEW streaming shows get away from squash matches and guys I never heard of.
I agree, because it looks like, look, they're trying to feature in some capacity the enhancement talent, if you will, while also showing a talent that doesn't get much TV time, or, you know, maybe TV time is just not allotted for them for the week. But I agree, it needs to be broken up and just produced better also. It's just really a hot knife through butter of match after match after match after match, and there's just too much.
Yeah, they should wrestling. Be doing a TV show.
I agree.
If it's worth doing, do a freaking TV show and get some of your featured performers out there and featured matches. You see, Tony doesn't want to ever fire anybody. Wrestling is his family. It's his happy, happy fun time. It's not work to him. As the great Red Foreman once said on That 70s Show, if it wasn't work, they'd call it super wonderful, crazy fun time or skippity doo.
Oh, shit.
It's work. And you got to, sooner or later, you're going to have to fire somebody and not give every indie job guy a chance to shine. Although I will say, let me contradict myself in shocking fashion. I haven't seen the match yet, but an indie guy who works a lot in Pittsburgh, Big Bill Collier, Bill Collier.
He's got Moxley.
He's like 39 already. And I saw him for the first time recently at a IWC show, an indie show in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
And he's great.
Yeah.
He's great. So he was going to have a match, I think, with Mox.
Yep.
And I'm anxious to see how it turned out. I just hope he didn't get hurt by one of Mox's punches.
Oh, my God. You're saying that punch couldn't hurt air, huh?
Well,
at Jimmy Bell 311 asks, any chance Cesaro gets a world title at all during his run with WWE?
No. I hate to give the Reader's Digest version, but they just don't have that kind of faith in him. I think he's been woefully underutilized for the most part. I like when he was the bar.
Yeah.
With Sheamus. I thought that was pretty good. But honestly, I haven't seen him used in anything as compelling as when he was in Ring of Honor as the Kings of Wrestling with Chris Hero.
Yeah, I would have to agree, and it's a shame because the talent is there. Cesaro, one of the most talented and probably the strongest man in all of wrestling. He's got the credentials. I think, again, there's just nothing that's being put behind him to put him in the position where you can buy him as a viable champion or even give him an opportunity. Hopefully this run with Seth Rollins at WrestleMania can turn some heads in that creative room and maybe give folks a different opinion and view on Cesaro. I think he could have a hell of a run as a champion. You put him on Raw and match him up with McIntyre, the physical matches that those two could have will probably rival that of what McIntyre was able to do with Sheamus. I wish we would see it, but I agree with you, Mark. I don't think we're going to.
Well, now, let me clarify, Mike. I think he deserves that.
Yeah.
I think he deserves much better than he's gotten, but I just don't think he's going to get it. See, I would have booked Cesaro from the beginning like Taz in ECW. I mean, they don't have the same look. Taz looks like just a wrecking ball. But I would have had suplex, stretch, suplex, stretch, suplex, stretch. The kind of guy who just wears your ass out. And instead, he's just another pro wrestler.
Yeah, I have no words. I have no counter that you're 100% right. It's a shame. But hopefully, like I said, Rollins and Cesaro tear it up at WrestleMania, and folks might get a different opinion, because that is a guy who is unbelievably deserving and I think could carry the banner if given the opportunity. Mark,
by the way, my boy, was Taz great or what? I watched some YouTube of him the other day. He was so good. I got a quick Taz story.
Awesome. Taz was awesome.
When I was on Nitro, and I liked him, great guy. When I was on Nitro, Scott Steiner threw about 5 suplexes in 90 seconds, right?
Yep.
And I said, look at him. He's a human suplex machine. And as soon as I said that, I said to myself, shit, I stole that without even thinking it. So I was, like, the next day, I knew he'd hear about it. I got his number from one of the boys and called him the next day. I go, Taz, really sorry. Stole your gimmick. Won't do it again. Don't kill me. And he was very understanding about it. And
brother, I appreciate the call.
I felt bad about it. about it. I did. You know, there are some guys I wouldn't mind screwing with, but he didn't deserve that.
No, he didn't deserve it. And, you know, he was his run in ECW was unbelievable. And I think, you know, we can probably dive into some of that down the line, some of the runs that these guys had that just didn't translate in other places. But Taz is one of those guys that you believed everything coming out of Taz. Like, he was the kind of guy, the way he was presented and the way he worked, that you wouldn't want to, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning on any side of the street, you wouldn't want to run into him.
No question. He's one of those guys. I'm glad he's my friend.
Mark, we're going to close it off with at Johnny Catalina. What would you change production-wise with any of the shows? Would you stop the multiple camera angles switching back and forth quickly?
You know what? I do not know. Mike, you'd be more qualified to comment on that than me, but here's one thing I will say. I remember way back when World Class in Dallas revolutionized production. Put the camera in the ring, you know, put the camera in vignettes, you know, did so much different stuff. I don't know what I would change specifically, but I feel like it's time for something different to be tried. What that is, I do not know. But I feel like it's time for something different to be tried. What say you?
I agree. I was fortunate that down at NXT, I was kind of given a little latitude to try crazy shit. And, you know, Triple H would rein me back in when it was time to be reined back in. But we were able to try a lot of stuff that wound up making its way onto Raw and SmackDown, like, you know, the LED floors, the LED ribbon boards on the ring apron, and even just a lot of the camera shots. Like, I'm a big fan of using that jib camera, that sweeping shot that you kind of see for ring coverage. I was always a big proponent
of
that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So our director, Marty Miller, he and I kind of came up together. He's now directing Raw and SmackDown. We kind of had a lot of fun and innovated as best we can. And obviously with Triple H, I mean, I think it's very, very understated and undervalued, and maybe under, you know, maybe it's just not known how phenomenal of a television mind that Triple H has. And I think that's a testament to him working with Vince, because Vince has also got a phenomenal mind for the production side of things, and he really, really immersed himself in learning all that. Triple H did as well, and the stuff that we were able to create down in Orlando was great together. You know, in terms of the camera cutting and stuff, like, I see those gripes all the time on the internet. You know, look, a lot of the times maybe it's excessive, but you have to understand there are moments where the frenetic camera cuts are part of the story that you're seeing. If you're seeing a chaotic brawl, those rapid camera cuts are kind of meant to make you feel like you're part of that. You'd see the same thing in a Hollywood movie, whether it be herky-jerky camera movement or whatever. It almost puts you in, and it helps you to receive the emotion that we want you to receive as a viewer. On the other side of that, though, in terms of what's going on now, I like what AEW is doing for their production. I would actually like it if they tried some things presentation-wise to differentiate their pay-per-views from Dynamite. To me, watching Dynamite may as well, it looks as if I were watching it with the mute and volume off, it would just be like I'm watching Dynamite. The presentation is the exact same. It all looks the same. I think they could use to spice that up. On the WWE side, the thing that drives me crazy is the amount of times that WWE runs B-roll to remind you what has happened, what may have happened earlier in the show, or what may have happened a week and 2 weeks and 3 weeks prior. To me, you make the live viewing experience less of a can't miss and more of a, oh, well, if you turned away, we're going to catch you up on it. You're almost being reminded too much. To me, personally, as a viewer, I have an oh shit moment if something happens and I know that I missed it and I'm not caught up on it. And now I know, like, oh, fuck, I really can't miss this because X, Y, and Z happened, and now I'm kind of a little bit behind in the story.
I agree. I think that encourages channel flipping.
Yeah,
because the way it's presented, I agree with that. I'll tell you. Let me wrap up with one. I have a lot of dumbass stories, Mike, and I'll probably wind up telling them.
I love them all. Bring them in.
We did an angle one time when I was on TV that Scott Steiner had Goldberg. I think it was Scott Steiner had Goldberg set up where Medeiji accused Goldberg of sexual harassment.
Okay.
And Goldberg was arrested. Something like that, right? Yep. And so if he didn't get back for his match with Steiner, he was going to forfeit the world title to Steiner, right? I think that's it. That's the rough idea, right?
Sure.
And so the way it was going to go was Goldberg was going to get out at the nick of time and drive a police car down the ramp to the ring and jump out just in time for the match. And it wasn't the ramp. There was like another entrance that he could drive the car in, like they had it set up, like maybe alongside the ramp. I forget exactly because, like Eric Bishop always says, that's a long time ago. But I remember I said in production, and I just said it real offhandedly, make sure you guys don't miss that shot of the car. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, well, if I'm correct, that's a camera we don't often use, the one that you would shoot that where the car comes in from.
Sure.
And you'd be just more likely to miss it. Just be careful. And they go, who are you to tell us that? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I go, listen, $10 says you miss it. And they're like living at that point, right? So we go to air. Guess when we picked up Goldberg's car, Mike? It was already at the ring and he was out of it. And I said on air, somebody owes me $10.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, hey, man.
Stuff like that got me fired eventually.
Yeah, but, you know, look, stuff like that needs to be called out as well because shots like that are key pieces of telling your story on TV. And there's
no question.
Nothing that would get me aggravated more than a missed shot. But stories for another time. Double M. You and I have
great stuff. I love it.
We have day jobs to get to, my brother, but thank you so much for this week.
Thank you, man. Obviously, tremendous stuff, tremendous prep. I love it.
Yeah, hopefully we got the folks fired up at home and listening to it. We can't thank you guys for the support, growing us to over 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. You know, do yourselves a favor, do the world a favor, do us a favor. Spread that word, continue to spread the word about the best wrestling show, period. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at the THEBWSP. And just spread the word, man. We really, really appreciate all the support and all the love you guys have shown us in our short run here, and we're looking forward to bringing more to you. So for the super genius Mark Madden, I'm Mike Mansouri. We'll see you next week on the best wrestling show, period.